greet each one in Jesus' name this morning. One benefit of COVID adjustments is we adults get to look at life through a different lens, through the children's perspective. And as always, there's challenges that we can relate to in that as well. Wonder how we were doing with our seed planting this week. We had an assignment from God this week too, and how were we doing? Well, for our message this morning, I want to greet you in Jesus' name. And sometimes we think of our phones and all this social networking stuff being all negative. For me, it was a positive thing. This week, toward the beginning of the week, I got someone posted a status that reminded me of two very important and very basic spiritual principles that I need to employ if I'm going to be a successful child of God. And it just arrested my attention. It was just so foundational and so basic. But it said this: two things to remember. Take care of your thoughts when you are alone, and take care of your words when you are with people. Take care of your thoughts when you are alone, and take care of your words when you are with people. It just arrested my attention, and I pondered that powerful admonition. Because usually when we're with people, what we're thinking comes out, doesn't it? And it's usually when we're alone that we have time to do some thinking. When we're with other people, our thoughts are externally influenced. We might get into some groove of thinking, but because we're with people, they said something, they did something, and it diverts our attention, and our thoughts go this way or that way because we're with people and our thoughts are being influenced by what they are doing or what they are saying. Our thoughts are redirected. But when we're alone, our thoughts tend to go wherever we allow them to go. Like water in a lazy stream, all that's pushing it is a gentle slope down at the bottom. And usually where we allow our thoughts to go is some kind of comfort zone to us. Whether good or bad, we find comfort in the thoughts that we're allowing ourselves to focus on, or we wouldn't be focusing on them. I was thinking about doing a little exercise this morning, set my stopwatch for maybe 15 seconds or so, and ask you to tell me how many thoughts you had in those 15 seconds. Now, 15 seconds doesn't sound like a very long time, does it? And it wouldn't have been a good test to do it here because we're in public and you would have been suspicious why I'm doing it and it wouldn't have been a fair trial. But I'm told that if we sat still and could write fast enough, in a 15-second window in a quiet place, our mind would probably have went somewhere between 8 to 12 different places. 8 to 12 different thoughts in a 15-second window. We churn out about one thought every 2 seconds on average. One thought every 2 seconds. Oh, I know, some are very fleeting. We barely even think we thought them. It was just one of those things, sometime I should send a text to grandma or whatever, and it just went through our mind and it was gone just like that. It was a flash. But we are constantly at work in our minds, trying to bring rapid-firing ideas, perspectives, and thoughts into some sense of priority. Some we dismissed, some we thought about longer. And then we try and make them suitable for practical living. It's one thing to think about, I should send a text to grandma, and it's quite another thing to decide between which load of laundry you have a few minutes to get that done. In this steady flow of thinking is a thick filter between our thoughts and feelings, our head and our heart, that we're constantly processing. And we need to take care of our thoughts when we are alone, because out of our thoughts is the things that we do. When we are alone, we don't have other mature input available at the moment. Our thoughts can very easily take that path of least resistance and go places maybe they shouldn't go. When we are with someone, at least if we're the talkative kind, some of us tend to think out loud, and our thoughts can get instantly challenged or filtered. But in quiet, thoughts can easily digress to worst-case scenarios and become ditches of self-doubt or phobias or obsessive thoughts or vices or misdeeds, you name it. Whatever brings us comfort is where our thoughts can go. But thankfully, the opposite can be true as well. In quiet, we have the opportunity to become our own stimulus to correcting the unnatural flow of thought into what God would want it to be. If it has a wrong bent, we have the time to adjust, take positive steps to flow the right direction. We have a luxury. We have a luxury as Anabaptist people that some people don't have, and that is community. Community. We enjoy being with each other, and that can be a wonderful and powerful tool. And this whole pandemic thing for us was very, very unusual. But you know, for some people in this world, it didn't change their life much at all, because they don't really live in community anyway. But for us, it was very life-changing to not have community, to not be able to do what we're doing here this morning, to not have people giving input and seeing into our life, and it was life-altering. I'm told that the real estate craze that is happening, sounds like pretty much across our country to more or less degree, is that people are understanding the value of geographical proximity, and that people really matter in their life, and they want to move closer to the people that matter in their life. I thought that was interesting. You know, it is in community that we are challenged. It's in community that we grow. But I would like to believe that more often than not, it is in quietness that many victories are really won in our mind that are going to produce lasting fruit in our life. You know, we get together as people, and we work with people, and we can challenge each other. But I don't know that I ever heard a story of someone say that cigarette pack was put in the trash the moment after their coworker challenged them about it. Usually I hear more stories related to, I was driving down the road one day and I reached for my lighter and it suddenly really hit me. And I threw it out the window. Or some story like that. It was when they were in quiet, and when they had time to process it, that it really got a hold of them, what they're doing to themselves. And they took initiative, because their thoughts when they were alone were positive thoughts about adjustments that were needed in their life. Take care of your thoughts when you are alone. As I pondered preaching on this subject, I wasn't sure what God had wanted me to say or where I was supposed to go. Of course, there's Bible passages that came to mind as I studied, and I ran into some well-worded quotes from people that about thoughts that were valuable as well. And I wasn't sure how to develop this message, and it was feeling a little bit scrapbooky as I was thinking about this. And I finally decided to give it the title, Thoughts About Thoughts. Thoughts About Thoughts. That's all I have this morning. I have some thoughts about thoughts. And I want to turn to various passages of Scripture so that we can take care of our thoughts when we're alone. My first point is, our thoughts in quiet matter to God. Turn to Psalm 139. We have this knowledge in our head that God is always present. We have that knowledge in our head. But sometimes, maybe when we're alone, we can tend to forget that. When we want to let our thoughts get away on us, take us places we shouldn't go. Our thoughts in quiet matter to God. Psalm 139, verse 22. I'm sorry, 139, verse 2. Thou knowest my down sitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down and art acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. Our thoughts in quiet matter to God. There can be something about personal time that feels like it's our own time. We're not hurting anyone by what we're stewing over at the moment. We deserve this stew time. After all, it's been a rough week. It's been a rough day. We deserve to just vent a little bit in our mind. Some of the things maybe we think about, we'd say, well, I'd never say this to this person. I'd never tell them that to him or her. But I got to work through it somehow. And we use our quiet time to maybe stew in ways that are not good. But it just feels good. It feels good. Just like that little boy planting those seeds. They're going to grow. They're going to grow. We need to guard what we think. God seeing what we think. We tend to maybe be more careful in public life, not to let our brow get too furrowed or our lips pucker too much, or we might be embarrassed because somebody might say, what are you thinking about? So we're careful there that we don't let our thoughts get that progressive. Because we're in public. But if that same person saw us in private, would they see a furrowed brow? Would they see puckered lips? Would they see an angry expression? Would they see, and we say, well, we're in quiet. It's okay. I'm not hurting anybody here. We can play and replay our grievances. We can self-talk the revenge we wish we could take. But then we catch ourselves and we say, oh, we'd never do that. But deep down, it felt sort of good to live out the fantasy. Those are dangerous alone times. If we allow our alone times to take us in those places, they're dangerous alone times. The momentary feeling of vindication is all a farce. Reality is right around the corner. And we need to be like the psalmist. Verse 24, see if there be any wicked way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. That's what we want. Try me and know our thoughts, our private thoughts. We need to guard them. Number two, thoughts in private make us a person we become in public. Thoughts in private make us a person we become in public. Oh yes, there are times it feels like we said or did something. We say we did it without thinking. It was just so spontaneous. It just happened. There wasn't premeditation, and it feels like we didn't think hardly at all. But many times our spontaneous reactions, if I may call them that, actions, are a result of what we allow ourselves to think about in private. Proverbs 23 and verse 6 and 7. You can turn to that. I'd like to read two verses there. Proverbs 23, verse 6 and 7. Eat thou not the bread of him that hath an evil eye, neither desire thou his dainty meats. For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee. Thoughts in private make us a person we become in public. I looked up that word thinketh here in verse 7, and I was intrigued by what Strong's had written as being the original thought behind this word. It said to split open, to reason out, to calculate, to reckon, to estimate. To split open, to reason out, to calculate, to reckon, to estimate. For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. That is what our thoughts do in private. We replay our real life situations many times. And we split them open. And we ask ourselves questions. What happened? Why did it happen? Why did it happen to me? And we reason. We say, oh yeah. They did this and this back here. And now they're doing this and this over here. And yes, this makes sense. We got it. We got it figured out. And we end up with an estimate, an approximate calculation of judgment on what happened. We end up framing, leveraging, valuing people and their motives because of our estimate that we came up with. I spend some time in my day, I don't enjoy it, it's not my greatest enjoyment, to do estimating. But it's where you have to look at the big picture and you have to cut it down in bite-sized pieces and try and figure out what for value this project is worth, that we can still hopefully make a little money and get it. Estimating is, to me, a lot of work. But we can do that in our quiet times, too. We can come up with estimates. We split it open. We reason. We calculate it. And we come up with some sort of opinion that we believe, this is really close. I got it. If not dead on, I'm really close to what has went on here, what that person was thinking, how that all played out, and why I am where I am. I recently had someone share how they tried to reach out with a show of care in a difficult situation. And the reply they got spoke of a person who apparently was spending their quiet time in a way that wasn't good, because they had an estimation. They had an estimation. It came out in their response. We can't put hate in the flask, in the quiet of our laboratory, and hope that love will come out when it gets mixed with a little reality. What we're putting in our quiet life, reality will only reveal. As we think in our heart in quiet, it will eke out. It will eke out. A couple of quotes I came across that I thought were good. One was from Craig Groeschel. He said this: To become obsessed with what others think of you is the fastest way to forget what God thinks of you. Another one, I don't have a name, says, don't always try hard to fit in. God made you the way you are so you can stand out and glorify him. It's in our quiet time that these kind of things get processed, and how we process, it comes out. Number three, thoughts in quiet can be a vain or an upbuilding exercise. Thoughts in quiet can be a vain or upbuilding exercise. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 27, you don't need to turn there. It says, which of you by taking thought can add one cubit unto his stature? Well, we know the answer to that. There's probably many a little schoolboy would have wished that he could do that. And I'm sure if you would ask me what I'm thinking about, I would say, I'm thinking about how I can grow another foot so I'd be better proportioned. You'd say, Howard, what's wrong with you? It'd be vain thinking. We live in a world that has realities, real life things that we have to deal with and make decisions on. We wish we're different, but they're not. And we got to do something about it, and we have to do it now. And we can just sort of numbly do what we got to do and maybe feel a bit bothered by the urgency of life in general, but we're pressed into many things that are happening and decisions that need to be made. But then there are those opportunities when we get into quiet that we can replay, and we can start to use the time to wish ourselves into some fantasy land or something different than where we really are. And that is a futile way to spend our quiet time. Which of you, by taking thought, can add one cubit? Who of us can change our circumstances? Oh yes, there are some things that we can do. But sometimes it's easy and quiet to get into some wishful thinking, some vain thinking. And we bog our mind down with how basically wishing life could be different. Why did this have to happen to me? These kind of things always happen to me. Why don't they happen to other people? Now it's costing me money that I don't have. If I was in this and this family, it could go on and on. We can think about if the circumstances were different. And we can become wishful and contemplative. But that's not reality. That's not utilizing the time in quiet for God-given purposes. When there's not a remote possibility that we can change the reality, it's like trying to take thought and add a foot to our stature. That's a waste of time. Now, I understand it's because of some people that were dreaming pretty wild in their quiet time that I'm enjoying some things today that would have been thought impossible a decade or a century ago. I just never would have thought that you can send your voice over a wireless network. I remember the people dreaming about electricity, you wouldn't have to connect wires. That to me sounds foreign. But there's some people apparently thinking in quiet that they might dream up something yet. They might. There are new inventions. There are things happening because quiet time is used in upbuilding things that are stretching. And that has a place. I'm not talking about those kind of things. But sometimes I think people think themselves tired because of frustration with their current situations, who God made them to be, the talents He gave them. And it ends up being a contentment struggle that comes out in quiet time many times. It's not when they're with friends and family. It's not when it comes out. But when they're in quiet, it comes out. Guard your thoughts when you're in quiet. Guard your thoughts. Number 4, thoughts in private can make us spiritually strong or vulnerable. They can make us spiritually strong or vulnerable. For sake of time, I'll just read 1 Corinthians 10, verse 12. It says, "Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall." All right? There's somebody that thinks they're standing. It says, "Take heed, lest you fall." Private thoughts can very easily become a time of inventory and self-evaluation of ourselves. Because that's who we're seeing right now. That's who we know the best. That's who we're relating to. And they may or not be very accurate. We may tend to have more confidence than we should in ourselves. Or we may tend to not have enough confidence in ourselves that we are hindering God's plans and God's purposes for our life. Thoughts in private can make us spiritually strong or vulnerable. It can take us one way or the other. I remember talking to an old man sitting on his walker. We were talking about getting old and some of its complications. And he made an observation about another older person. He said, they need to start using one of these. And he gestured toward his walker. I remember when I had my knee injury and I was told that I need to use a walker. Now, there was something about a walker. I would have much rather had a crutch, but I couldn't use a crutch because of my PICC line. There was something about a walker that just felt a little below my dignity. A little below my dignity. But eventually I caved because I did want to get around and I didn't want to make matters worse. But there was something inside of me resisted that idea pretty hard. You know, there's something inside of us that when it comes to spiritual things too, we have maybe more confidence in ourselves than what we really should. And how we think about ourselves in our quiet time can either help us to think realistically, or they can build on that confidence and we assume risks and take on things that we maybe shouldn't because of trying to, whatever, protect our ego. We feel more macho than we really are. Spiritually speaking, it is far more dangerous to fall spiritually than to fall physically. Because to fall spiritually, we fall into sin. We fall into sin. Let him that thinketh he standeth take heed. Take heed. We lived in a time of a little more isolation at home. Are we taking heed? Did we take heed through that time? What we allowed to come before our eyes? Or do we believe that we're strong enough to handle this? Recently, the news, there was a popular evangelical preacher that has taken a fall from grace because of a vacation picture. He thought it would be funny to people, but it wasn't. And I had to wonder, what happened along the way? How did he get there? That such actions put on public display he thought would be okay. How did he get there to even do it in private? No matter how spiritually strong we may feel, our self-talk needs to remind us that we are human. We're no better than anyone else. If it sounds like a bad idea for someone else to do it because we perceive them as weaker than us, we better be careful. We better be really careful about what we're telling ourselves. I'm going to read a story about Ken. It's not a story that we can relate to as being a people that does not watch movies, but a good reminder for us in private life in the things we do relate to. Ken's mother was preparing a salad for the evening meal when Ken asked permission to go with a few friends to a R-rated movie. Ken knew the family rule was not to attend any movies rated stronger than PG, but he thought, just this once, my parents might give in. Ken's mom was busy making a salad at the moment, and instead of answering with a yes or a no, she proceeded over to the pantry where the waste can was kept and reached in and dug out several pieces of the family waste. She came back to her salad bowl and without a word sprinkled them in to the family's dinner in the making. Mom, what are you doing? Ken protested. You're putting trash in the salad. His mom replied, I thought you would not mind a little trash with your meal. It's just a small amount. Without another word, Ken knew what he needed to do about the R-rated movie for his spiritual good. You know, as Christian people, sometimes we can get caught in that, can't we? We think it's just a small amount. But it's ruining. It's ruining. It's in the salad. Number five, our thoughts are subservient to God's thoughts. Very basic thought, Isaiah 55, verse 8, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither your ways my ways, saith the Lord." Proverbs 3, verse 5, "Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding." We know, as Christian people, we know that we are always in good hands when we're in God's hands. We know that in our head, right? I would like to believe that the most seasoned saints can look back on life and realize that the times that they thought their plans were being rejected by God, that time proved that they were only being redirected to something better. We have those moments in our life when we pray about something and the way God answered us is completely different, maybe almost a U-turn from what we were thinking about. But it's at those times that we do well not to try and rationalize it out and think it through from our own understanding, but to just see the hand of God in it and say, you know what? God has a plan. I ran across this quote: "The two hardest tests on the spiritual road are the patience to wait for the right moment and the courage to not to be disappointed with what we encounter in our wait." Another one: "God didn't add another day to our life because you needed it. He added because someone out there needs you." You know, our thoughts when we're alone can be so self-centered, and they can go that way so readily. But really, our purpose for living is because God has plans and purposes how we can bless others. That's really why we're living. Number six, godly thinking in private gives us courage in public. Philippians 4 and verse 8. Let's turn to that one yet. Last one we'll turn to. I'm sure you thought we'll probably go there somewhere along the way, and we're going to go there at the end. Philippians 4 and verse 8. It was some finally words, some end of the trail admonition here. It says, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things." The soul that gives thanks can find comfort in everything. The soul that complains can find comfort in nothing. One small positive thought in the morning can change your whole day. What we think in quiet really does matter. It can make a big difference in our day. Another quote I came across, it said this: "Ego," is spelled E-G-O, "is the only requirement to destroy any relationship. So to be a bigger person, drop the E and let it go." I like that. I don't think it was ego that penned verse 9 here of Philippians chapter 4. It was a product of a deliberate thought life and quiet moments that translated into living that could be duplicated with a promise of peace. He first of all said, "Finally, brethren, think about these things." And then he said in verse 9, "Those things which you have both learned and received and heard and see in me, do, and the God of peace shall be with you." How many of you are ready to give that as a challenge to the brother or the sister beside you? Whatever you have learned, received, and heard, and seen me do, and you're going to have peace. You're going to have peace. What a goal to live for. None of us, I would trust, would feel confident to say that this morning, because we're all a work in progress. But he spoke with confidence, because Philippians 4:8 was what he was living, and it translated into a Philippians 4:9 experience. He had peace. He had joy. He was in the Lord's work. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 3 says this, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringeth into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ, and having a readiness to revenge all disobedience when obedience is fulfilled." We're in a warfare. It's an imperative part of a walk of peace, what we do when we're in the warfare. My places of imaginations, my high things that want to exalt themselves in my life may be different than yours. My thoughts may not go the places that your thoughts go when you're in quiet. But each of us has a warfare that we need to bring thoughts into captivity, and we need to have a willingness to revenge disobedience. I'm going to read a partial quote. It says this, "Being a Christian is some about cautiously avoiding places of temptation to sin, but most about courageously and actively doing God's will in the midst of sin." And that is warfare. We live in a world that is very prepared for battle at a moment's notice, because they have something to protect. And the way they protect it is through warfare. I recently read something, if I knew it, I forgot it. But it said that along with our president, one of his bodyguards or one of his men travels with a football-sized box that has everything that's needed in a moment's notice to have a nuclear war start. It has the code and the connections, and it travels with the president. And it was presented in a way that it's a very dangerous system, actually, because it's all in the hands of one man, basically, to at a moment's notice protect the country. My Bible says when it comes down to us, our daily spiritual warfare is going to need to be done with a readiness to revenge all disobedience after we exemplify obedience in ourselves. Verse 6, "And having in readiness to revenge all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled." Our quiet thoughts are to prepare us personally for exemplary warfare, where we can rebuke sin because we have the code to victory. We opened our Bible every day, and we allowed it to work in our heart and in our life. And it's not because of our grit or our determination, but it's because God was gracious in revealing the code to Christian victory a day at a time. It is there because we uncover the spiritual nuclear code through a daily quiet time with God. One day at a time, we discover that the Bible is our bread for daily living and not just a cake for special occasions. A few quotes here in closing. "Your worst days are never so bad that you are beyond the reach of God's grace. And your best days are never so good that you are beyond the need of God's grace. Don't talk so others can hear you. Talk so that through you, others can hear him." Let's let our Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8 thoughts in quiet become a loud voice to those around us, because we put them to work in our life. It became a blessing to a friend. It became an encouragement to someone. It became healing to maybe even a personal wound that we were carrying. But because we processed it right and quiet, we are a great tool for God. Kim Keller says, "We are more sinful and flawed than we dared to believe, yet at the very same time, we are more accepted and beloved in God than we ever dared to hope." That's the God that we serve, and that's a God that will help us to be what he wants us to be. Shall we kneel for a word of prayer?